And we are back with episode 822 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
822? Oh, yeah. I'm Gary from Jacksonville. Gosh, 822. That sounds like a number I should play in the lottery. But anyway, I see we have a very expansive show schedule this week, so I don't want to keep talking and hold this up anymore. John, so just keep rolling.
Oh, yeah. We have so much on the list to talk about. As we promised, that is one big reason why we are essentially on a every other week schedule right now. Not only that, but just a lot going on in the summer and not a whole lot on TV. So spending a little bit of extra time doing other things. So definitely catching up on some other stuff as we get here into August and some things start hitting the airwaves. But we're also looking forward to an extended break as we get into late August, early September, which we'll talk about in just a few moments. But yeah, I guess what you've been up to the last couple weeks, Gary?
I guess I won't have to give a spoiler notice for my own existence, but no problem. I've been up to a few things, and John, you always seem to blow me away, so thank you for letting me start. I had the opportunity to finally watch Galaxy Quest with one of my children. Oddly enough, the impetus was a patch in one of the mailing boxes. Why am I blanking out on what it is? It's one of these mailers you get with a bunch of different stuff.
Subscription boxes, yeah.
Yes, well, a subscription box, and I'm blanking out on which one it is. But anyway, so I got in one of the subscription boxes several months ago. I got a patch for Galaxy Quest, and my daughter thought it was a cool looking patch and wanted to put it on her backpack. And then she said, "But I have to go watch the movie." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I can't very well have the patch on my backpack and never have watched the movie." So we sat down and watched it, and she said, we talked about it for a minute or two ahead of time, saying, as much as people want to initially think it's a mocking of Star Trek, it's really one of the nicest homages to the show that could happen. And it's, very reverential. And I related a story that Jonathan Frakes told to Patrick Stewart that he needed to watch it because it was, it was really a love story to Star Trek. And he watched it. And Sir Stewart, yes. Sir Patrick, felt the same way, and it very much was. And as we watched it, my daughter got the same thing. And I was like, as you get to the end, and he says, by Grapthar's hammer, you will be avenged. It's like, how different is that from the beginning? You see how the actors internalize their characters to a large extent, having gone through this crucible, so to speak. And we just overall had a really nice time dissecting it in the way that, as my daughters hit teenage years, I wasn't able to have with her at younger ages. So it's nice to start getting into a depth with your children into, genres and things that definitely tickled your fancy or at least, appealed to you. But now you can talk to them in a more adult manner about it and go into layers and details that weren't possible for somebody that was 8 to 10 years old who just thought it was funny when they laughed at the joke on screen. So it was really a fun experience, and I'm trying to look at some other things to hopefully do that with again as this sort of new window of discussion I found opened up for me. On the physical front, I left my house, left my TV, and I took the whole family down to the Kennedy Space Center. I usually get down there at least once a year, possibly twice. As a side note, it had been a little bit more than a year, as they informed me that my yearly pass expired 6 weeks ago. Anyway, it's always fun. They take you basically on a bus tour around launch pads. Launch pad either 39A or 39B. In this case, we went to 39A because 39B, of course, has SpaceX there getting ready to launch the next day after we were recording the show, actually. And I got it was pretty far, but it's a big enough rocket. I'd say probably 1,000 feet, 1,200 feet away, and you can actually see the rocket. At this point, it's laid down. SpaceX builds their rockets laying down and then just erects them as they're getting ready to launch. So you see this nice, big, long rocket. It's kind of fun. The pad looks a lot different than it did during the space shuttle era, and they even built a new small building where they do the rocket assembly very close to the pad. But, it's nice to see that sort of modernness, and then at the same time, then they took us and you get to see, they have, for all intents and purposes, a full Saturn V rocket over there, and you get to go look through the rocket. And I'm a big space hardware geek, for lack of a better term, especially when it comes to Apollo missions. So over the last 6 or 7 months, as I'm reading about different details and stuff like that, it's such a fun thing to be able to read about something or see a picture of something and then go to the actual physical thing and look at it and compare like your thoughts and what the pictures look like and try and match things up. And it's a coming together of, you know, your thoughts and reality in a way that's very satisfying. So that was fun. I've been looking at the different onboard fuel couplers lately, so I got to read about them for the last several months, and then I got to go actually there and start look at them in person, which is fun. So I have to figure out my next little geek thing to narrow down on for the next time I come to visit. So they have a full Saturn V rocket, a real capsule that never got to launch off, as well as Apollo 14, which did come back. They have a moon rock you can actually touch with your own hand. There's a bunch of stuff, and then after that they take you back to the main sort of center, and they have two IMAX films with various things from the space station to one called Desolation Moon, narrated by Tom Hanks, which is really gorgeous. They have a few other ones as well, and it's all sort of included in your fee for going in, so you don't have to buy movie tickets or anything like that. You just walk into the theater, plop down, and you know, watch this huge IMAX amazing picture. Over the past few years, they've installed the Atlantis into its own building, and they have it set up, and I don't want to reveal how they reveal it per se, because even with our spoilers, I really want people to be surprised by it because it's so well done. But regardless, it's shown like as if it's flying in space. They have it tilted at about 30 degrees. The doors are open for in the payload bay. They have the antenna out for radio communication, and it looks like it's hovering in space doing its work. And they have it set up across three levels, so you can see that, you know, above it, even with it, and beneath it, just as you're walking through basically a spiral staircase. And they did a really good job. They have memorials for the two shuttles that that didn't survive. They go through a lot of the little technical stuff that happened. They even have a space shuttle launch ride that has gotten a little bit, either I'm getting older, it got a little bit more intense since I last rode it a year ago. Mm-hmm. But it was I had ridden it within the first few months of them having it, and it was very rough. And then they sort of pulled it back a little bit, and it was a lot easier. And now I swear it feels like it's back to the beginning again. So it was well worth the 5-minute wait. And it's a very fun ride, and it definitely would compete with anything Disney related, or I don't know, Busch Gardens, or Universal ride. Definitely it still is up there with it. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of fun to be within a few feet of these spacecrafts that, you know, we've seen on TV for years or heard about or read about. And, you know, there you are standing reading the numbers off the heat tiles because you're that close. And it's a lot of fun. I took, as I said, family members, and my mother was visiting. I brought her down. She hadn't been to it in over a dozen years, and they've put a lot of money into it. If it's something you've only done once in your life and you said, I don't want to go back again, they've changed the whole thing. It's well worth it if you haven't been back in the last 5-6 years to go see it again. You won't recognize the place. It's a lot of fun. We spent 8.5 hours there, and we did not finish. I didn't see two of the IMAX movies. They also, it used to be on an offsite location, but they now moved it close to the Astronaut Hall of Fame, so you don't have to drive. It was a few minutes down the road, actually, and now they've incorporated it all together, and we didn't even get a chance to go in there either because just we ran out of time. So, it's definitely a full-day trip, and as I said, it's just fun to see all the different, you know, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, space shuttle. Even they had a mock-up of the new Orion space capsule that's going on. And as I said, I actually saw with my own eyes a SpaceX rocket that's going to launch within a few days. So, it's not the stale museum place that people might think that hasn't been touched since, you know, 1979 or anything like that. They keep putting out more new content and a whole bunch of stuff. They even had a scale model of the new James Webb Space Telescope, which is getting ready to launch in a few years. So that was fun to look at the scale model of it as well to get a sense of what the thing's going to be. So overall, that was a lot of fun too. And then and the book front, I'll switch over to that now. Uh-huh. I recently picked up the latest hardbound edition of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. I'm a big Legion of Superheroes fan, and even though we're not currently being published, they've had offered a series of archive books over the years. The original archives actually went to book 13. Oddly enough, they decided to stop it at 13, and this book is for all intents and purposes, is number 14. It follows the actual numbering schedule from the book next, but they felt that the, you know, going with book novel 14, it might not grab enough people, so they started renumbering them, even though it literally falls. It's the next issue after the 13th volume ends. So, you know, a lot of diehard fans are just calling it volume 14. Some people are even making mock-up number 14 covers, dust covers to put on the book so that their collection can keep going again. But, we start to get introduced to names that are probably start to almost be familiar to even non-comic book fans. Mike Grell from Green Arrow fame primarily started drawing for the book in this archive series, as well as Dave Cockrum, who created the new X-Men, you know, like Storm, Nightcrawler, people like that, you know, characters like that. So he was so definitely big names were starting to come onto the Legion at this point, or at least people who did become big names. So it's quite a fun ride. And as I said, for issue 14, I'm definitely hitting. It's an odd thing because I've been collecting long enough that I'm starting to overlap what the issues that I actually picked up off the newsstands. And so you say to yourself, do I want it in this nice, convenient format? I already have at least one copy of it.
Right.
And so it's sort of, but I'm going to keep going. It is fun because to dig through my long boxes for individual issues is difficult at best. Yeah. And to have a hard bound, you know, on a bookshelf that I can easily access is definitely a value for me, at least for that series. You know, everybody's got either a book or a series or something that, you know, they like to go back to every once in a while. And for me, that definitely is the Legion. It's might be a bit unpopular now, but, you know, it's like it's the utopia sort of Star Trek kind of thing that, you know, things will be better in the future and humanity won't screw things up quite so much. And everything's going to be better for everybody. So, I like to look forward to that. I think that, you know, as we hit too much dystopia stuff, it sort of makes it hard to look forward to better things when your idea of imagination is rooted in despair and darkness and breaking down of society. I'd rather, you know, look forward and hope things get better. So it always is what appeals to me about Legion, the original Star Trek, things of that nature, where, you know, things generally improve. It's not perfect by any means. There's still some discontent and stuff like that, but overall, you know, things are better. So I think they can be again. So I look for that type of stuff because I think it's important to, you know, look forward to something positive and not negative, but I can still enjoy a dystopian story.
Oh yeah. And these days, you know, you have no dearth of them.
We're living it, John. We're living it.
Yeah. In fact, a couple of the things on my list might qualify.
Oh boy.
So. Yeah.
And then we do have one thing that John and I come up with, you know, our ideas for these shows. And we did have one thing that we crossed over on. So I guess maybe I'll start it and then you can pick it up.
Sure.
This idea of we started off as we entered this new media age of things coming on like Netflix and Hulu, and they were aggregators, meaning they pulled together all these different disparate sources of entertainment and put them together in an easily obtainable, or at least cheaply obtainable, single location where it was easy to pick, you know, the shows you wanted and everything like that. But we've started to have little bits of fracturing here and there. Originally, you know, cable companies were our original aggregators. Then we moved on to stuff like Netflix and Hulu. And now we've had individual, I guess, entertainment sources start to splinter off a little bit. HBO started to offer their own direct service. CBS started to offer their own direct service. In a sense, getting ready to and leaving some of these aggregators. Now we recently got news that Disney is also pulling out of an aggregator. They're going to start pulling all their content from Netflix. They were never a huge supplier of their content to Netflix, but nevertheless, Disney is a major force in the entertainment industry around the world. And so, you know, this is another symbol of, you know, another way that the way we get entertainment is changing from networks to aggregators. Now everyone's splitting off on their own. And honestly, John, I'm worried. I mean, it doesn't sound like much, but, you know, do I have to start paying $7 a month for like every channel that I want to see from now on? That's going to be awfully expensive. And I don't know who's going to make the cut and who isn't.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. And we've been kind of tracking this happening for a while. And in fact, I mean, over the years, we've almost predicted that this is exactly how things were going to go. And unfortunately, this is kind of the downside to everybody saying, oh, we want a la carte TV.
I wish they'd shut up.
And when you do that, this is what happens. Everybody has their own, and it's always going to be like, you know, $7.99, $8.99, $9.99, sometimes more. And what you wind up with is a bill that is much, much bigger than what you were paying when you bought these big chunks of channels that, okay, yeah, maybe you barely watched some of them, if at all, but you still wound up on the whole paying much less for the channels that you did want than you do now. And, you know, cable is still is really at this point becoming even a better deal than it used to be, because now you've got the alternative, and the alternative is not as cheap as people thought it would be.
I know, as I start to, you know, sort of calculate, okay, if I cut the cord, you know, you still need internet access, you still need this, you still need that. And then you say, okay, and then I'm going to pay, you know, $7 a month for CBS. I'm going to pay, I think it's $10 or $11 for HBO. Then I'm going to have to, now it looks like I might have to get Disney. Then I'm going to have to get probably some variant of a Comcast network. And then all of a sudden, I'm not saving any money, John.
Yeah, you're not. You're really not. Because in order to have all that streaming at the quality that you want, you need to have hardline, you know, connection that's really fast. And yeah, guess what? These companies figured that out. So they bundle, they drop the price. If you only get the internet, you pay out the wazoo for it.
Yeah.
And that's because they know that they're not going to get the back end, which is why they have these bundles in the first place. It's unfortunate that it went this way, although at this point I do note that in some cases at this rate, you know, it used to be that you would cut the cord in order to eliminate commercials, and I know some people who literally they are still hung up on the commercial thing. To me, it's almost like, okay, if I'm going to have to pay for cable anyway, or you know, Fios in our case, then sometimes it is the most convenient option anymore. And those commercials become less and less annoying to just fast forward through, because at least I'm not, you know, trying to find out, does my device carry the app that has the one show that I want to watch? You know, it's great that CBS All Access wants to run the new Star Trek, but you can only really watch that on certain devices. And that's a pain in the butt. So.
Oh, and then I ran across this the summer. We were vacationing for a few days, and we wanted to watch Game of Thrones. We go to pull it up on our HBO Go app, and you know we're cable subscribers, so we have, you know, we're legally getting it. Nothing, you know, nothing hinky. And I go to plug it into the TV. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you're not allowed to do that.
it wouldn't let you, or the app wouldn't let you.
The app wouldn't let me.
Really.
Yes, I wasn't allowed to stream it to a television.
That's really irritating.
And so I'm like, ugh. So yeah, so then you're even more sort of scratching your head. It's like, oh, geez, is this cutting the cord, you know, worth it? So we'll have to see. But yeah, it's definitely, things are definitely fluxing.
And yeah, I think that, you know, you ask the question, at what point do you, you know, how do you make the decision anymore? And for me, a lot of the time, it's how much of the content do I really want to watch. If it's one show, I really have to think about, okay, is it worth $9 a month or $10 a month for that one show? Now, if it's Game of Thrones and it's a couple months, maybe. If it's like, you know, USA Network, I don't think so.
Well, you know, that's another issue you talk that we haven't, well, we've touched on it in other aspects, but yeah, so that you know, with their series running so much shorter now, what do they typically run, about 6 to 7 months? So you're gonna kill it after 7 months. Yeah. You know, you won't even be getting the, especially as the costs go up, you won't be carrying this thing for the whole year. You're gonna carry it for that season of the show and then kill it.
And if the show only has 13 episodes, that's maybe 3-4 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting, and I know that there are a lot of people that are going to automatically jump to alternative means now. They're going to say, well, why should I pay for, you know, all this stuff when I can simply get it somewhere else for free? And I was having this discussion with somebody about something a little bit different. It was about Apple Music, right? Or if you want to go with Google Music, Amazon Music, whatever it is.
Any streaming, yeah.
Any of that. The kind of brilliance of it, in my mind, is that you make a great argument against people pirating music by making unlimited listening for a certain monthly charge an attractive option. So you eliminate the barrier of a quote-unquote high price by making it you know, you can put a value on a like a CD, right? And you can say that you can buy the CD for $12, let's say. Well, if that's how much you're going to pay a month for the service to have unlimited streaming of whatever is on their service, you can pretty much get your money's worth in you know, one album download. So they make it worth your while. I don't think a lot of these streaming services that are one network only are worth that trouble, because when you add everything up, are you really saving anything by getting their service? I don't think you do. I think actually it's cheaper to just buy the episodes off of iTunes or something else.
Well, or even if you're willing to forego immediate pleasure, you wait till the series is finished, you log in for 1 month, and most of them provide 100% of their back catalog, and then you could just burn through it in a weekend.
There you go. Exactly. You could do that too. But you see where I'm kind of getting at is that that's where you go, okay, well, I'm paying for the library. I'm not paying for the new content, so to speak. I'm going to pay as long as I want it, and that's it. But then that's where, you know, you get the common argument against pirating, which is if you give them an alternative that is more convenient than what they would have to do to pirate it, you will usually get them to pay the money, especially if it is considered to be a bargain. And I think that that's true in some respects, and I think that there are a lot of people that are ignoring the logic of that and putting, you know, one or two premiere shows on their, you know, relatively expensive monthly charge, and yeah, it's not going to work out for them as well as they think it's going to, depending on what their expectations are. Hmm. If they're expecting tens of millions of people, it's not going to happen. If they're expecting a million people, well, maybe they will. But the idea that everyone is going to start fleeing Hulu and Netflix and have only their own thing, it's all about diminishing returns in my mind. Disney, probably going to have enough people that will be willing to do it. Kind of like, you know, when the BBC decided to split off and do their own thing for Doctor Who and many, many, many other things. That was actually worth it. Disney, depending on how much they've got on their own, I actually could see them doing quite well.
Well, I think they have more than enough content to... support
and
a channel.
There are people that are, this is not something I need to tell you, there are people who are literally rabid about Disney and will happily pay a monthly charge for it. So
I've heard of such people, yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think that some are going to be perfectly fine doing this, but then there are others where, they're going to struggle if they do it this way. Or they're going to have to make sure that their apps are available on the main streaming services, like, you know, Apple TV or, you know, Amazon Fire stuff or whatever it may be, because if you can't get a quick app for it, it's just going to be so much easier to just get it somewhere else. And, I don't know about you, but I've definitely, noticed that there are a lot of people that are getting those hacked Fire Sticks.
Yes.
And this is the kind of stuff that it compels people to do so. So, it's something to think about. Let's see where we're at here for our episode, because actually we're about halfway through on our usual time, so that's good. So we'll talk a little bit more about some stuff before we get into our other topics in the next ep. But let me go ahead and talk about some of the things that I've been watching. Some of it has been acquired through alternative means, but there we are. But the first one here is a movie that just came out recently, and that is Atomic Blonde. Now, you know, Gary, how there are some...
Oh, hold on 1 second. During the course of this show, there might be times when we reveal spoilers from some of the latest television and movie episodes. We don't do this to destroy and crush your souls, rather just to have intelligent conversation. So if you have not watched or listened to some of the items we're going to be discussing, we just wanted to let you know that we will spoil, not for spite's sake, but rather just to encourage conversation. Okay, John, go ahead.
Oh, yes. it's probably worth having a spoiler warning at this point. Although I won't go into too many details because you haven't seen the film. So
I've been trying, big barn, and trying to steal away to see that thing.
Right. Well, I hate to tell you.
Oh, don't tell me that.
It might be one that you save for, you know...
You mean the universe has been conspiring in my favor this time?
It has.
Oh, thank you, universe.
I'm sure that there are some that will disagree with me, but I found it a bit disappointing. And not because the plot was particularly overly familiar, although it is a very, you know, kind of stock espionage plot and so forth. It's set in Berlin in the days leading up to and culminating in the fall of the Berlin Wall. So definitely a late 80s type of thing. The soundtrack is all late 80s and 80s music. The style is pretty cool. I liked it a lot. My biggest problem is that the main character has very little personality. She's now, just very cold.
Now, she's been compared to James Bond on occasion, or at least that's the some of the hubbub that they try to throw on this. So what is is that? Is it just sort of that cold Daniel Craig detached kind of thing, or is it somewhat. Something different?
Although I think that he has more humor. I think the problem is that you know, in some ways they compare the character to James Bond because of the fact that, you know, she's kind of a hard-drinking, hard-smoking, love-em-leave-em type. And that's all well and good, but she also doesn't show a lot of humanity in the process. And I think that, yeah, there are times when that definitely is something that matches the Bond archetype in mm-hmm. some ways, but I think that... In my mind, it's like when I think of Bond, I think of actually a lot more personality shining through when it comes to, say, like a Connery or a Moore even. Craig, yes, had the coldness in like Casino Royale. That might be the closest to what this is, but you just don't feel like you get to know the character very well. And while that is intentional, I believe, I think that it leaves a lot of people cold. And there is just something missing from the equation. The fight scenes, there are some really nice fight scenes, and I will say that there's at least one in particular towards the in the third act that is unbelievably brutal, and you really get the feeling of how physically damaging one of these, you know, stock action fist fights would be. That you at one point, she and her opponent are literally like reeling and just trying to push themselves up off the floor to be the first one up to try and gain some advantage. And it literally takes them like a minute and a half just to stop. And it's like, no, that's actually pretty accurate. So, that was pretty cool. But for the most part, my problem, I guess, with it was that it is a, it is lacking in some kind of, it's hard to put my finger on, but there is something that just seems to be missing from the equation. And I think a lot of it is that your main protagonist is by design a bit of a cipher. And, you know, this really cold, hard, you know, super agent, so to speak. And it doesn't help that I rewatched Kingsman. And they had someone who was super, you know, and that movie obviously has someone who is super competent as an agent, but has a lot of charm and personality. And this is just not that same kind of character. And I mean, they literally ran the trailer for the second Kingsman movie right before it. So it was almost like, here, compare, contrast. And yeah, it just felt like, I don't know, something was not quite clicking. And I enjoyed it well enough, but it was not the movie that I feel like the trailers kind of promised. It was a much more... this is going to really sound bad. It reminded me a lot of how the trailers for Suicide Squad made the tone and style of the film seem a lot more impressive than the actual product was. The product for Suicide Squad was so self-aware in its attempts to be edgy and comical, or at least kind of a wry sense of humor, and it didn't work because it was such a patchwork. But this had a lot of that same aesthetic to it, and it just feels like it couldn't quite... It didn't... There were moments that were clearly meant to be humorous, and it didn't earn it. It just kind of threw this kind of like, hey, we're really cool, and you know... It was like, no, actually, you're not selling me on that. Where, quite honestly, that's, you know, to make that comparison again, Kingsman didn't have to tell you that they were cool. They just did their thing. And it was a really enjoyable movie, because they just kind of... They didn't try to push you to believe that it was something. It actually just did it, in my mind, anyway. So yeah, that's my thing for Atomic Blonde. Unfortunately, it wasn't a horrible fail, but it also wasn't the hit that I was hoping it would be.
Okay. Now you talked about characters. The story you said was rather typical, or
If you're familiar with espionage stories, you can probably see the kind of revelations coming a mile away. And that's all fine and good, because sometimes having a familiar story lets you focus on the characters. But that's where I feel like they were kind of thinly drawn. And part of it is that, yeah, the whole idea is that they are... their own personas are kind of underneath of what the masks that they have to wear, and it's like, okay, that doesn't give me a whole lot to work with if the plot isn't going to keep me, you know, running. Like, your typical Bond film is moving at such a fast pace to keep you moving and not thinking about things too much that this one is a little slower paced. So it didn't quite feel that way. But, yeah, I kind of went in hoping, and it didn't quite give me what I was hoping for.
Gotcha.
So, now, a movie that did surprisingly meet my expectations was an anime film that should be a little more widely available in the U.S. in the fall. I think it's supposed to come out in October. But it's called... I'm not going to try to say the name in English, trust me. No one needs to hear that. It translates as A Silent Voice or The Shape of Voice, depending on what translation you look at. What's kind of funny is that the file I have was named A Silent Voice, and then the opening credits said The Shape of Voice. So you can see it as either one. And we saw the subtitled version. But this was the film that beat out the very popular Your Name film for the top award for animation in Japan last year. It's not at all what normally you would expect me to be watching, because it doesn't have anything remotely sci-fi or supernatural or kind of esoteric involved with it at all. It's really a story about kind of tackling your own demons as you grow up type of story. And I'm not going to try to give the names of the characters, but it kind of focuses on two in particular. There is one boy who in elementary school bullies a deaf girl and is really just incredibly horrible to her. And eventually she just stops going to the school because of various reasons, and this boy then gets ostracized because of the extent to which he went bullying the girl. And then it picks up several years later in high school where they run into each other again. And both of them have, because of the experience they had earlier in their life, have been kind of damaged. He's very withdrawn and has a lot of social anxiety, and she's just incredibly depressed. But the characters, both those two main ones, the deaf girl is incredibly compelling as a character, and I almost wish that this was a series, because I'd love to watch more of her story. She's just really very watchable because of just her personality, and you just want to hear more from her, which I think is really why people love this movie, is that you have a character that doesn't speak a lot, so when she does, it kind of really hits you, and I think that's actually part of the design of the film, hence the title, right? But it really, even the secondary characters are really well done. Everybody kind of comes to it's not like a, you know, shocking thing that happens, although there are certainly shocking events, but you would normally in this kind of story, and here is the one spoiler I'll throw out there, so for those who don't want to know, you know, fast forward a few minutes, they don't wind up actually as a couple, which is what you would expect, but instead it's more of they come to terms with each other as friends. And that is a really important part of the story. And so a lot of the other characters, it's very similar, where they kind of find where they belong in their lives and in each other's lives. And it's this nice slice of life type movie. There's a lot of little nuances of Japanese culture that play into it that we really enjoyed, because it was like, oh, hey, you know, that's something that is... you know, oh, we recognize that. Or, hey, that's something that we didn't realize was, you know... taken in that fashion or something like that, right? And so it was, and because it was the subversion, we actually wound up talking a little bit about their choice of wording and what words they were using at certain points and so on. So it's really a great film. We enjoyed it a lot. I definitely recommend it to anybody who loves anime films and really wants to get a nice slice of life Japanese story to go and see this later in the year. It deserves to get seen a lot by a lot more people than it has already. So highly recommended. Definitely would go out and see that. In fact, okay. I mean, when it is in a theater, I might just go out just to make sure that just to show my support for it, because I love the fact that there are all these special events and things, like, you know, the we saw Kiki's Delivery Service last month, and whenever these movies are in the movie theater, I try to get out there if possible, because I do like the fact that they do these kind of special events, and I want to see it happen more often.
It's nice also that the movie theaters are trying to fight back against, you know, on-demand delivery in your house, and by offering a variety of, you know, different shows where, like, as you said, this is, might be a, you know, a limited run, but they could probably maybe get 1 to 2 showings out of it, and they're willing to do that now, where years ago they might not have. Or, you know, I know the latest trend that I've been hooking on to is seeing sort of old movies again, mm-hmm. different anniversary movies. For example, I know Wrath of Khan's coming up on 35 years, and I believe at least theaters in our area of the country are going to be having showings of it.
Yes.
And so, you know, things like that. So I'm glad that they're trying to innovate to some extent and give people things that they enjoy seeing in a different format than their couch.
yeah, they make it actually something special, which is what it always used to be, right? It wasn't this thing where you just kind of expect to have something every week that's going to be worth watching. So to me, I'd rather go to a movie where everybody in the room is really excited and pumped to see this beloved film, or a, you know, a very special film that normally they wouldn't be able to see, then just go to the next blockbuster, right? I mean, unless there is something very compelling to make me want to go out and see it in the theater these days, it's usually either just an opportunity arises, or it's something like Star Wars, right? Where, yeah, again, it's that crowd that brings something special to the table rather than just seeing it on a big screen. Because these days we all have a fairly big screen if we really want to watch it on the, you know, we can do with that, as you said, from your couch, and you can wait even a couple of months if it's even some people like the MCU movies or the X-Men movies. It's not so big a deal for them to see it right away. They are more than happy to wait and see it in the comfort of their own home. So something like this, where you may not even be able to see it in your own home, this may be the only way that you're going to see it as intended, so to speak. Yeah, I love that idea. And yeah, if Wrath of Khan is around here, I would love to go and see it on the big screen again. It's been a long time since I have. So
I know. Think how big that thing crawling into Chekhov's ear will be. sorry.
Will it be as big or bigger than the one in the remake? Anyway. Yeah, so that was actually, we just watched that last night, so it's very much in my mind, and something that I was kind of wary of, because it wasn't the kind of story I usually watch, but I was really charmed by it. Unfortunately, you know, we are going to talk about the shows that we are definitely enjoying right now, but there are other things that we're trying to watch, and for those who are wondering, like, hey, what else are you watching, and is it worth watching as well? Well, gave this show Salvation a try.
Okay, yeah, I heard of it.
Oh, it's bad. It's it would make a really good double feature with Zoo. That kind of quality, yeah.
Oh boy.
Let's just say I'm really glad that there's other things on TV and other things coming back and streaming soon, because we need it. We need it. And unfortunately, this one actually looked good on paper, so I was a little disappointed, because it's basically, maybe not dystopian per se, but an asteroid is going to collide with the Earth, and, you know, some people know about it and are trying to secretly handle the situation while keeping it a secret from the public and all of this, and it just evolves into schlock so fast. It's unfortunate. However, not really watching a whole lot of TV that's not on our list, because I have other things, like those aforementioned movies, but I'm also reading a lot. And yeah, I love to do that anyway, but I'm glad that I have a little more time to do it right now. And I finished just a few days ago Caliban's War, which is the second book in the Expanse series. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. This was another one of those things where I got about 200 pages from the end and wound up like marathoning the last third of the book. Now, what's interesting here is that the first book, they really stuck pretty close to the plot points of the first book in the first season and a half of The Expanse, the show. But what I noticed with the second book is that they did essentially the same plot points, but the way that they got there at some points varied between the original source material and the TV adaptation. And it was really kind of fun to sit back and read and go, okay, oh, that's how they did it on the show. They did it this way, but this is how the book does it, right? Mm-hmm. And then about halfway through the book, almost exactly halfway through the book, I was like, and that's the second season finale. So now I'm in uncharted territory. So I know how the third season is going to go for a while. So I really liked it. I think that it's going to, I definitely understand why people are wanted this to be adapted for a series so much. I love the fact that the authors are involved with the TV adaptation and they really get their chance to play with the same story in two different mediums. But yeah, definitely I recommend it. I know Edmund did previously, but I'm echoing his words on that one. Also, just recently, for those who are, to get back to the anime manga type of thing, Attack on Titan Volume 22 came out. And this was notable because for those who wanted to know the full backstory of what's going on, this is the volume for you. They finally get around to explaining a lot of things, and boy, does it completely revise your point of view.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite a stunning set of revelations, and it all kind of adds up, and some of the big holes that you think there are in the story actually get kind of filled. So I really enjoyed that one. I ripped right through it, and certainly if everyone's like, oh, they're never going to tell us what's in that damn basement, well, they do, and it's a doozy. So yeah, definitely recommend if you haven't read it up till now and you don't want to wait 2 or 3 years for the anime to catch up to it, go out and catch up with the current volumes that are out there. And then finally, what I'm reading right now is the first book in a Star Trek trilogy called Prey. It's another one of these 50th anniversary trilogies, and it's...
Is it by Dayton Ward and...
No. This one is by John...
Voldemort?
No, I think the last name is Miller.
Okay. It's not, just they've been on this run of the same authors for...
Yeah, I know. They have for a little while. But no, that's not the one that I'm thinking of. It's kind of over there out of sight. And I can't quite see the name on it. But it's not one of the normal or the usual suspects, so to speak. But the book's called Hell's Heart. And it kind of... It involves the Klingons quite a bit. And it actually kind of ties back into Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. So... interesting so far. I'm only about a third of the way into it, so I'll see how that book goes. But so far, it's a fun read. Otherwise, I'm really looking forward to things that are coming up soon. We have The Defenders coming up very quickly. The mm-hmm. Tick. And for those who want to either gnash their teeth in horror or laugh themselves silly, the Death Note adaptation on Netflix. which is Americanized. So that's why I say, oh boy, you're either going to hate it or you're going to think it's hilarious. But that was my plate. I had a lot of things that I was kind of enjoying, and I didn't even get into the fact that I'm almost done Mass Effect Andromeda. I'm 80% complete, so I'm kind of winding down on that.
Now, have you just been going through, or you've had to go back? Like, is this one of those things where you have to go back to certain things to get the completion percentage?
Oh, or
you
just... this one, there's a lot of backtracking. Far more than there has been in previous Mass Effect games, to my knowledge. And... that has been a little bit, it takes a lot more time to do things then, and it's also a little bit irritating sometimes because some of the places you have to go back to are not as convenient to travel in as others. But and I just as a slight pet peeve on this one, some of the reason why I'm only around 80% and not higher is that some of the side missions rely on random spawning of items that you need to have in order to continue forward with the mission, and I am not spending hours upon hours waiting for the right thing to spawn. Some things, yeah, okay, I'll just let that go. But I'm in the middle of what I believe is the final mission because lots of plot points are wrapping up, so I should be wrapping that up just in time to check out Uncharted Lost Legacy coming out in a couple of weeks because I love my Uncharted games. So, yeah, that's about it for what we've been up to. Bring you up to speed on the last couple weeks and a couple reviews of things that hopefully were useful to you. Anything else, Gary, while we're thinking about it and kind of wrapping this episode up?
No, I think that's about it for right now.
Okay. In that case, we will be coming back next time with our episodic discussion episode. Kind of as what happened last week, I think that probably is the same thing is going to happen this week. We're going to have one episode that's kind of the non-episodic discussion, and then another one that is all of the episodic discussion, and then just have those two episodes for the week. It is a really slow summer as far as content goes. I think probably a lot of you have recognized that fact. And yeah, it's just easier for us than to try to force it. We're just going to talk about what comes to mind, what's interesting to us, and then we won't try and fill time. We'll actually just kind of let it be what it is. So yeah, and what we'll do at the end of next episode is kind of talk about what our schedule is going to be in the next month or so, as we have a couple conventions coming up that are going to be requiring a little bit of scheduling or rescheduling or creative scheduling. Let's put it that way. That's a good way of putting it, right?
Yes.
All right, so we will be back with episodic discussion next time. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review. So let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.